Welcome to Think Like the Enemy, the podcast where we challenge the conventional wisdom and explore alternative viewpoints on the world's most pressing issues. Your host is Frankie Aviles, and every week he'll be joined by a guest commentator to debate the pros and cons of some of the most controversial and consequential policies and actions in history. Even if history is today.
Is today.
From climate change to human rights, from trade wars to cyber attacks, and from democracy to authoritarianism, we'll try to understand the logic, motivations, and implications of the different sides of the argument. Whether you're curious about the complexity and diversity of global politics, or you want to broaden your perspective and critical thinking, this podcast is for you. So tune in and get ready to think like the enemy.
What's up, everybody? This is your boy Frankie again with another episode of Think Like the Enemy. Today, I have a very special guest with me. It is somebody that I actually found on Facebook, somebody that is interested in doing a podcast, and he actually has a very unique concept that, in my opinion, is going to be a very interesting take on some of the topics that a lot of people are not talking in America today. His name is Brian Roof, and his podcast is called Skipping Planets 420. This podcast is coming to you in summer 2024, and I hope that you stay tuned. I will share all his content on my Facebook and X, because I think that his perspective on a lot of the things that are happening in America and even the world, and just a metaphysical side of a lot, I would say, the topics that people don't want to talk about, is very interesting. And here with you is Brian Roof. Brian, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Frankie. Thank you for having me, man. And thank you for the nice intro on the website as well. Thank you.
It is always a pleasure, my friend. And it's more, a lot of people within the community, the podcasting community, feel the same way that I do. And it is that if somebody's starting, why wouldn't you allow them the opportunity to come into your podcast and have a conversation, man? Like, I think that's like the most effective way to get to know another person face to face, even if it is through a computer. You know what I mean? I wish I had the setup that, you know, people can come in and stuff like that and actually have a conversation. But if this is what we got, you know what I mean? We got to use the internet. AI is going to take soon, brother. So we got to, we kind of have to, you know, play with what we can for now.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I think it, you know, when I asked you to join today, man, it was something that it meant a lot that you allowed me to come on and be a part of your podcast. For
not
sure.
No problem, man. I think people are going to get a, you know, good kick and a good sense of what you're all about. And I hope that you get a good viewership, man. You're very successful. Because this is something that, you know, I do it as a hobby. I do it as an outlet, a creative outlet for myself. I like to, not to think, but I like to give people something that they're not getting right now in the mainstream media. And it is a perspective that comes from the heart, man. It comes from my life experiences and what I believe is a short time in this world. I'm 36 years old, but I've had a lot of experience in the geopolitical spectrum, thinking like an enemy for the military for a long time. And a lot of people don't, we always talk about, you know, think outside the box. I think it's more of like the perspective of a triangle. There's two points of view, and then there's one that is always thinking differently. So why not bring that perspective in? So then maybe we can help people bring, you know, come together somehow. That's it. You know what I mean?
Right on.
Yeah. At the end of the day, people will think what they're going to think, but I want to give him something extra.
For sure, man. That's, I think a lot of times that's what's missing is a thought process from the heart. You know what I mean? And like actually seeing both sides of the situation and what do you do with it? Right.
So absolutely. Yeah.
I love it.
There's actually a good book about this, believe it or not. Somebody called Patrick Bit David. He's actually a army veteran, and he wrote a book called what was it again? I had it on an audiobook. He basically bridges a gap between emotion and logic, but on a business standpoint, and it's called Choosing Your Enemies Wisely. Okay. And yeah, it's something that I've always had trouble with. Like, you know, honestly, I'm a very logical thinker. So in my life, like personal life with my family and everything else like that, with my son's cerebral palsy and everything, I think very logically. that bridge between logic and emotion, it is on me, it is actually lost. Because not because I want to, it is just because of the way that I'm wired. It is just the way that I think. I think that when we are having an emergency or having a situation with a family member, logic is something that is missing because emotion takes over. So for me, I like to have a switch. And that's what I tell my wife. I was like, I have a switch. I'm not thinking right now like his father. I'm thinking like somebody that is watching the situation from afar. That way we can make the decisions that are going to impact them properly and, you know, fruitfully. It's hard. Trust me, because it's hard seeing your son having a seizure in front of you. And you're like, what can I do?
Well, it's allowing you, I think, to also act logically. You know what I mean? Like, it's what do we need to do here to figure this out? Not like, I'm dad, I'm emotional. Like, what can we do at that moment to help him, to make right. him the most comfortable during one of those seizures or whatever the case may be, right? Like, yeah, how can you, like, and you got to look at that almost like a first responder in a way, right. you know, to say, hey, this is what's going to help the situation, right? And then you can fill in the blanks with the love later, right? Once you get Correct. The situation stable, you can fill in the blanks and you can make sure that, hey, I'm here for you, son, different things like that. So I think that's important.
Yeah.
Cool way to look at it.
Yeah, man. It's just in the same way that Iran and Israel should be thinking right now of the conflict and the little pickle that they have gotten themselves into, if you think about it. So the first news that we're going to talk about today, remember that I do more of like a geopolitical spectrum to everybody that's listening abroad. If you like this type of comment, please like, share, comment, follow, and subscribe. If you do not, share it with somebody that might. It's just a different perspective on the things that are happening today. And this came actually across my desk 2 days ago when the actual president of the United States talked about the attack from Iran on Israel. We have to understand that the United States doesn't want to get into an actual conflict in the Middle East, even if we now know that actually the United States was actually helping Israel shoot down some of the rockets that were coming into their actual borders. We all understand that. But we also understand that Israel has to respond even if they fire their first bullet. And that's what the president of the United States has actually outlined for us here in his wisdom with the actual information that he has in front of him and the actual cabinet. And I'm going to read a little bit of it for you. So earlier today, Iran and its proxies operating out of Yemen, Syria, and Iraq launched an unprecedented air attack against military facilities in Israel. I condemn these attacks in the strongest possible terms. At any direction to support the defense of Israel, the United States military moved aircraft and ballistic missile defense destroyers to the region over the course of the past week. Thanks to these deployments and the extraordinary skills of our service members, we helped Israel take down nearly all the incoming drones and missiles. I've spoken with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, to reaffirm America's ironclad commitment to the security of Israel. I told him that Israel demonstrated a remarkable capacity to defend against and defeat even unprecedented attacks, sending a clear message to its foes that they cannot effectively threaten the security of Israel. And then he goes on about talking about the actual G7 commitment that happened yesterday, the 14th. When all the nations on the G7 said, we will secure the safety and the security of Israel. On top of that, we have that Israel right now is actually trying to get the United States of America to help them retaliate on this attack. And I think that we were off camera, Brian. We were talking about what was the percentage that actually got through inside Israel. And I think it was...
Yeah. My last understanding, it was 1%. So you're talking out of 300 missile, drone, different attack, projectile attacks, a 1% kind of thing that caused minimal damage out of 300 plus attempts that were, headed off before, actually not even in the airspace before. My understanding is before it even entered the airspace of Israel, they were already intercepted. They were already headed off, and only 1%. So definitely where I could see where you could look at it as both sides, you can see it as a win. I mean, casualty levels, different things like that are non-existent or low as far as we know, right?
Correct. I think that it is when we were doing a live, because I'm a standing guest on another podcast called Free Speech Podcast. They're based out of Texas. And when we're doing the live, my understanding of the Iron Dome's capability is 85%. Normally, it's about 15% chance that they're going to get through. If only 1% of that 300 came through, meaning 300, so that means that the external capabilities of the United States, the British, that were also deployed in the area, which is something that the president does not include into this one. Also, France, actually, as soon as the attack happened, they sent one of their actual naval forces down the Med just to get to the other side of Israel in case something else happened. Shut down 99% of the stuff, meaning that the full capability of the Iron Dome was not tested 100%. We can all understand that. There is actually accounting, like money-wise, that it came out that Israel spent about $112 million in the barrage of missiles that actually were targeting the Iron or the actual geographical borders of Israel. The United States spent about $1.1 billion in suppressing this attack. The British, we don't have any information on them. They're a little bit more, you know, hush-hush about how much money they spent on their, we can say, deployments and such. So we don't know exactly how much they spent. But the difference is about they spent about 10% of what we spent. So we used some very powerful, you know, arsenal, of course, to try to shoot it down. We also saw in that live that some of the debris actually landed in Jordan. I don't know if you were aware of that or not. It was just like, dude, you can see like the whole freaking just rocket.
I saw, yeah, the whole, like the frame of it, everything like that, just kind of laying like a bicycle on the side of the road kind of thing, right?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I saw it and I was like, what the frick is that? Is that a freaking like a ballistic? Yeah, that sure is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with that, I'll give you my quick perspective on what could happen in the next 72 hours. So in the next 72 hours, Israel needs to respond in one shape or form. Not the intention of it, of Iran, because they did get, I believe it was three of their actual top IRGC officials killed in an attack in Syria, headed by Israel. I think that in the next 72 hours, we need to see some form of action plan from the Israeli government. Concrete, decisive, very strong arm when it comes to this conflict if they want to pursue a different kind of conflict. And in the same token, we need to see what the United States is going to do in the perspective of bringing down the tensions in the Middle East. It is not beneficial for anybody in the United States right now to have a war in the Middle East where we have the Yemenis, the Yemenis, you know, the Houthis coming in and stealing a bunch of cargo. We don't need that. We don't need the price of oil to go higher than what it is right now. We're already at $100 a barrel. Why do we need a higher freaking, you know, pay higher the gas pump? We don't. If we just open the actual, I don't know, the actual capability of the United States to actually produce oil, then we might be a little bit better today. But that's not the case. That's not what the agenda on their particular cabinet wants right now. They did open up about 10% about 6 months ago. Very hush-hush. They kept it down. They don't want anybody in Greenpeace or anybody, you know, that's against this particular, you know, climate to do so. I get it. It's part of the strategy at the end of the day. You know, it's not something that hasn't been done before in any other administration. So the next 72 hours, a response needs to be had, or unless Israel just wants to bring down the tensions. I hope that they do. We don't need a world war. We already have way too many conflicts going on around the world and too many possibilities to be had.
Yeah, you know, it's like we were talking off camera, man. It was like, you know, at this point, it's kind of like, what do they do next? And then it's been kind of relayed already that if they do anything else, well, then that's going to bring even a worse attempt. That, and then, like, so where does it all stop? It's almost like a rumor in a way. Like a rumor's got to stop somewhere.
Right.
You know, like where does it all stop? Where does it all kind of become a peaceful set? Is it even possible? You know, that this is that shadow war they were referring to, and it's been going on for, you know, years and years and years and centuries even, right? And possibly. And where does it stop? You know, and they say like a rumor stops with you, right? Well, man, what a tough situation. Like, what do you
It is
do?
an extremely tough situation. And for somebody that has been, inside the machine, inside the system, I can tell you that a lot of people are putting their heads together right now to make it stop somehow.
Right.
Bringing both sides to the table is paramount at this point. There are back channels that are being, catered to right now, and people are talking, and it has been said in the mainstream media. It's not something that we're saying that classified information, anything like that, will never jeopardize, my possibility of coming back to the federal government or anything. It is just something that has been said before. The Iranians have said it, the Israelis have said it. So what do they want to do? I don't know. I honestly don't know, because this is a strike that it was more like, okay, don't mess with us. Don't fire out our people again. Come on, respect us. We're gonna shoot a bunch of crap at you. We know you're gonna defend it. We're gonna target like army, stuff and Air Force stuff. We know where your crap is at. This is kind of what they felt to me. But again, like you said, it's a very strong point. Where does it stop? I wish I had the answer to that, but I do not. I
Right.
do not. And it's unfortunate, because I wish I did. That way we can, it will be the magic ball that will be like, ah, don't worry about it. Ah, don't worry about it, America. Everything's going to be fine. I wish we could say that, but we don't know. I just hope
Right.
that the tensions ease off, everything comes down, and we don't have any more issues. Moving from that, we're going to talk about an actual video that was brought to me, and it was actually reposted by Lives of TikTok. It has a bunch of views about an actual school, a middle school in Sebastian, Florida, which is about 30 minutes south of where I live. And it's an actual conflict between two students. No actual information came out of this other than the actual fight itself. Let's see what we have here for you guys. And for those of you who cannot see the video, of course, if you're listening, is an actual African American girl attacking white girl that's carrying like a music case or something like that, just beating the hell out of her. But again, two middle schoolers just fighting. The way that they portrayed it on Lives of TikTok is a kid brutally attacking a Sebastian Middle School in Florida. She had her beat, yeah, her heat. Heat, I don't know. I think she went to say head. I think it's a
Oh,
typo. Head beat
right, I
against
think
the
so
floor
too.
while other students stood around barking bizarrely. The school's response was telling the two students they couldn't talk. We're going to open it up. They couldn't talk to each other. They reportedly failed to inform the teachers that had been trying to shove this under the rug. And again, of
Wow.
course, it's social media, brother.
Sure.
Everybody's going to, it's going to come out no matter what. So when you see something like this, what do you think about, Brian?
So I tell you, man, when I see that, my mind goes to different places, right? So the first thing it goes to is, I'm a born I was born in back in the 70s, right? And
Right.
everyone gets in these schoolyard fights and things like that. And the media, like what I mean media, I mean I don't mean media, like mainstream media,
Yeah, of
but
course.
like video cameras on phones, different types of media like that. It captures those images, right?
Right.
And then it's put out for everyone to kind of see these days. When back in the day, there may have been 10, 15 fights, right? Or maybe two in a different area, right? And those never made the news. They never made social media, never made X, never made anything, right? But they
Right.
still occurred, right? So again, when I see that, I think my first thought is, wow, like that was captured and put across for, America to look at, right? And even across the world sometimes, right?
Yeah,
If it
of
goes
course.
viral across the world. So it's put out to do that. And that can sometimes be, it now becomes a judgment of social media, right? Because what we don't see is why that occurred. If you're thinking
Correct.
like think like the enemy kind of thing, right?
Correct.
We don't know why that occurred. We don't know what happened before someone pressed play.
Agreed.
It could have been the other way around. The attack could have been provoked. We really don't know. Sad situation all the way around. Even the fact is, we as society can do better, right? It's
Yes.
and we always can. That'll never change. But the I think it's a sad situation to see these two girls fighting, different things like that. So my mind's kind of a different places, man. It's like, wow, I can't believe this is a possible thing these days, because that's the older part of me, right? Like, man, you can send that across the media.
I get it,
And
right?
then, yeah. And then from that point, like, wow, man, like, and I'm not too far from there either, as well, like you. And it's, I just hate that that kind of stuff has to happen in schools. I'd like to know, I would like to know more about what happened.
That's exactly where I'm at too. What I think it's really interesting, right? It is that, and like you said, you were born in the 70s, I was born in the 80s. But I come from an island where racism, it is something completely different than what we see here in America, right? I see that, and I'm not in any shape or form trying to, I wouldn't say even, make it or make it known or make it seen or make it in a way that it is normal. But it is something that you see a lot more being talked about than you see back home in Puerto Rico. Everybody's pretty much on the same island, man. And for us, like we have here immigrants, we have Dominican people. And Dominicans just come in, they go to the farm towns, they buy land, and they just farm their happy little butts off. And they send their money back. They do. They send their money back to their family. They bring their family in. They do all the papers. They do all the stuff. Some of them come illegally. Some of them do not. And they perish in the freaking, boat ride from one side or the other. They do. But we never saw racism in my generation as the way that other generations have encountered racism. Coming from the Jim Crow era, coming from all the horrible stain in America and, society. From slavery. We did not see the same. When I was growing up, I did not see that. So the first time that I encountered racism was actually in the military, believe it or not. And people were like, "Oh, you're Puerto Rican and you just got to hang out with the black people." And I'm like sitting here like, "Dude, I'm like whiter than you are. Like, look at me. I look pale as hell, bro. Like, what are you talking about? No. You people always hang out with the black people." I was like, "What does that even mean? Like, I'm sitting here with you. Like, what are you talking about, bro?" So I never got it. Then I encountered like an actual higher up from me, and he was like, "Oh, I didn't know your people were smart." I was like, "What?" I was like, "Dude, we have doctors. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we have like medical schools. We have like, like fuck, Mexico's its own country. Like, Cuba has the best freaking medical school in the world. Like, what are you talking about?" So, little by little, I started understanding what racism was. Not that I didn't know what racism was, but I did not experience it in the way that we sometimes do here. I think that in the past 20 years, that scar has been just picked up and picked in a little bit more and more and more. And it's being consumed in social media more than anything else. Because if you're walking down the road, you go to your local gas station, you go to wherever you do your grocery shopping, and you see somebody else that is not in the same shape that you are, you don't give a shit about it. You just don't. They're just another American. But on social media and in the mainstream media, it's portrayed like America is broiling with racism. Like everybody just looking at each other, go like, "Ah, fuck you, you black person," or whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Like going outside is going to be a dangerous
Right.
situation,
It's like, "Oh, don't leave your house because, the Mexicans are coming over the fence." Like you never know. And it's like, dude, what are you talking about? Like half of our Middle Eastern. Like, what are you talking about? So, an interesting notion when dealing with this kind of stuff. And thinking like the enemy, like you said, we don't know the background to this particular middle schooler fight. What? One girl beat the other one. Okay. Should it happen? Absolutely the fuck not. No. It is stupid that something like this is happening, that teachers are trying to put it under the rug. No, because if my kid fought in school, I want to know. Because if he did it out of spite, I'm going to be his little ass. That's all I'm going to do.
Now I do have an issue with the part where the teacher's under the rug. You know what? That's not up to them. That's not up to them. In
Exactly.
my opinion, it's not up to them where
Absolutely
they
not.
get to choose what the parents find out about and
Right.
what how the parents handle thing. I think you're taking too much of a guard out of. And it's funny you mentioned the I think a lot of things to do with like not understanding different races, man. It's like it's a lot of that's learned behavior, right? I was just having this conversation. I went out with a few friends of mine yesterday to listen to a band,
Okay.
and one of the people was a Jamaican lady, super sweet lady,
Yeah.
and we were just sitting there talking about where I grew up in an area that was mostly which would be African American or whatever the case may be,
Yeah.
right? And that's where I just, you know, but one thing, and I told her this yesterday, and it really made me as a person, right, later on in life, understand why I think the way I do on some things. My parents never one time can I remember them preaching hate, right? I
Okay.
never heard them say that guy is a whatever or this
Right.
guy is this. It, man, it, I can literally go back to this Rolodex, right,
Yeah.
in my mind, and I cannot remember a time that my parents preached hate. So what that means is I was raised in that environment, and that's what I, you know, it wasn't a thing for me, right? It
No,
was
I
just
got you. Yeah.
a situation. It was like, oh, this is where I grew up, and this person's just like me, and this is it, you know, and
Do
you kind of make the
you,
best of it,
if I
right?
may interject, do you come from a working class family?
100%,
Okay, got you.
100% working class, absolutely. Poor working class.
I got you. Yeah, same here, right? My dad was actually a veteran, and he just lived off of his veteran disability, and he didn't work. He basically had a bunch of projects, but he didn't do anything with them. So we were borderline poor. He didn't, try to get businesses going, and he would run them to the ground. But we basically grew up in the working class environment as well. I find it that a lot of people within the working classes go through the same struggles that every other culture goes through, because more than likely they're in the working class blue collar industry, period. Doesn't matter which one it is, welders, plumbers, it doesn't matter. You're starting from the bottom, man, and you're trying to feed your family. That's it. So I find that in America, the lines of racism and the lines of disparity are intertwined, because we all see it that within the working social structure, people are very mingled together. So I can sit with anybody and talk exactly the same way that I would with a blue collar, with a white collar, with a professional doctorate. It doesn't matter to me, because we're all Americans at the end of the day. We all bleed the same way. So
You could even
that's
take that another level. We're all just
yeah,
human at the end of the day. You know what I mean?
exactly.
Like to just we're all in this, you know, one you know, I didn't choose to be born here,
Right,
right? You didn't choose to be born in Puerto Rico. You
yeah.
didn't choose we don't choose that. What you do is you gotta learn to, you know, embrace the present and like and just make sure that those are the things that and just follow that trail of love, maybe,
Yeah,
right? A little more deeper.
absolutely.
So
I
try to.
wish
It's hard.
more
It's easier
people,
said than done, right?
yes, it is. I
So
think a lot more people in America should feel this way. I find it that the topic of LGBTQ is one that is very, very like inflammatory for a lot of people, because I think that it has been portrayed in a way that is the new form of racism in America. If you don't go along with the narrative for that particular community, then you are completely against everybody, not the truth. I have one comment about that. It has nothing to do with this. It's just, part of the conversation and honesty.
sure, man.
I don't care what people do with their lives. At the end of the day, I respect it. I don't have to celebrate it, but I have to tolerate it. You're not gonna see me with gay pride flag around. You're not. I'm just not gonna be that guy. But
You
I'm
know what?
not
I
gonna.
think if I think that not to interject, but I think
Yeah,
if
no,
you
go
were
ahead.
to walk if you were to walk around doing that, I think you're less authentic, right?
Exactly.
Just the
Absolutely.
fact that you accept it. You accept the fact that you think one way and another person thinks another way,
Right.
and that person is happy. You don't have to carry flags around
Absolutely
and
not.
talk about different things.
Yeah.
I think that would make me not authentic.
I agree with
I
you.
think just accepting the fact that people are different makes it
Exactly.
authentic and makes it easy, man. You know what? It makes it easy
Yeah.
because it's true.
If we all
So.
believed in the Constitution of the United States in the way that it is written, we'd literally have to think of the other side as having the same rights as you and I do.
Absolutely.
You don't have to celebrate it, but you have to legally tolerate it. I don't do it because it's legal. I do it because morally, I have no right to be going against somebody and their preference in whatever they're doing. The one thing that I do have a problem with is that if we have a legal limit for alcohol, we have a legal limit for service in our military, to purchase a firearm, to drive, to boat, we have a legal limit for everything in this country. Why are parents touting the idea that their five-year-old can decide what they're going to be sex-wise when that is something that is assigned at birth? You were born a man or a woman. That's just my belief. But yet again, if that person believes that they are in the wrong body and by the time that they're 18, they want to do a sex change, go for it. If you have the money, go for it, man. Like, who am I to judge that particular aspect of who you are as an individual? I respect it. I have a lot of friends that are actually either gay, bisexual, lesbians. It doesn't matter to me. My son calls them uncle or aunt. It doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, they're beautiful people. They're wonderful human beings. We send each other fucking Christmas cards every year. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm not going to demonize everything here. Like, come on, bro. Like, seriously.
Sure.
How far is the, I wouldn't say the controlling factors in our nation, but the people that want to twist the narrative in a way that it sounds X, Y, or Z, how far are they willing to go to destroy the fabric of America? We have come to respect one another. We have come to actually work together. Why do we need to have another tragedy for everybody to get along and just work to the same purpose? As if you look at it, the last time that something was divided and it came back together was in 2001, September 11. That day, everybody bled red, black, or red, white, and blue, my friend. Everybody. Who did this? Where do we go find them? It's like we're like a teenager nation. That it's like, if conflict is against all of us, we're all together, we're all going in, and we're rallying it against. Why can we not accept one another and respect what we all think?
This is my take. I'm with you. You know, to touch on that whole parent thing, man, like, you really got to think, and when a parent is trying to push something one way or another, like, what really is the deeper thing there? These are the days that likes on TikToks are very important.
I know.
So if you post that I'm believing XYZ this way or that way, sometimes that gets you a lot of likes, that gets you a check from TikTok, or that allows you to go live and make more, you know, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So what is that parent really trying to do there? Is it really about the kid? Because we do have a, as a sense of a person, we, you know, we can be self-serving, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I think, again, that would be another one that would be even deeper of a conversation where it would be like, okay, well, what does that parent get out of that, right? Otherwise, so what? So what if the kid wants to go away? And so what the age, right? But what is the parent doing posting something private, a private decision within their home, right? So why do we even know about this?
Correct.
That should be a question. Why do we know about this?
That is really interesting perspective that I did not think about it before. Honestly, I didn't think about it before like that, because I just saw it, or I see it a lot when it comes to, I consume both sides of the, we're going to call it the political spectrum in the U.S. I do consume both. I consume the right and the left, the ultra right, the ultra left, both ways. And the narrative is what really messes me up, man, because on the right, they want to demonize centrism as a form of Marxism, because it is written within the Communist Manifesto that centrism is one step away from the two R's, revolution or reform. Okay, I'll bite. What about the left? Oh, we can accept the things that the right does because we need to be progressive. We need to move forward. The times are changing. Constitution needs to be abolished. Everything else like that. Okay. How far? How far are we willing to go within the conversation to debate it properly and to make an America that it is not just, doesn't have to be inclusive, but the masses need to actually come together some way, man. Because at the end of the day, our country literally makes laws for the majority of the people. We don't make laws for this 1% or 7% or 3%. It wouldn't be fair. It's fair to the mass. So how is the mass moving in America in a way that we can get to a centrist point of view as a nation that we can all say, here we are, intertwined, this is America. So yeah, it's a deeper conversation. I agree with you. A very interesting notion that I didn't think about before. Why are the parents doing it? I'm going to research that.
Right.
I really
You know,
am.
man, you didn't think about it, Frank. You know what I'm saying? Like there's things that go on in my house every day that you don't know about, and vice
Correct.
versa, right?
So vice versa
Like,
too, yeah,
so
for sure.
why is it being posted? Why is
I
it
love it.
being talked about? What, you know, it's a way to look at it,
It
right?
really
That's what I
is.
try to look at things,
It just in the same way, tying it to the next piece of news that we're going to talk about, it is in the same way that the visibility for certain issues that are interesting to some are being portrayed across America today. The next piece of news, which is the last piece of news that we're going to do, is about the actual massive protests that have been going around in our country today, starting from Washington, D.C., or actually not Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, and Seattle. And here we go with that piece of information. We're going to play a little bit clip of it. Here we go.
Or so of these anti-Israel protesters have gathered and are purposely trying to impede traffic there. Take a look at the left side of your screen. The Brooklyn Bridge has a pedestrian walkway. Looks like things are getting a little physical right now. Looks like some of those bike officers are trying to make a few arrests there. The crowd is now running further down the bridge. But you see the people watching from above up on the left. That is a pedestrian walkway where you can walk down the Brooklyn Bridge if you'd like to. These activists, these protesters have decided, no, we don't want to do that. We want to block traffic instead. So what you see, the officers in the neon shirts, those are bike officers obviously trying to either shoo them off of the bridge or start taking some folks into custody. And
And that is the first one on New York. Now let's see what happened in Seattle.
everyone has to walk to the airport. What are they doing?
And for those of you watching at home, basically what's happening is people blocking major roadways in and out of international airports or national roadways, protesting the war in Gaza and the genocide in Gaza, which is a very iffy subject right now in America. My take on this, Brian, is that I understand that people need to protest and bring visibility to the things that they care about. I respect that. The other side of that is, let's say that I had to go to the hospital with my son and these guys are blocking the roadways. What am I supposed to do? Where do their actual rights stop and my start? Because now you're hindering my ability to actually do something that could save or hinder the life of my son. Let's say that somebody else had a car crash a couple miles back and they need to get to a hospital. How are they going to get there if the roads are blocked? I respect them. I understand that they're doing something that they believe is right, but I don't think chanting in the middle of the road is the right way to approach this. They want to bring visibility. That is the best form of bringing it. Got it. But how far are we as a nation willing to take this kind of protests, for that matter, and be okay with the message being sent? What is your take on that, Brian?
Well, so like we kind of discussed off camera as well, it's like where it's clearly it's important to be able like how in a sense in our country, how nice is that in a way, right? To be able to do that, right? A peaceful protest, something that may be interruptive, right? And I'll address the part we very, very valid point with your son or anyone on that
Right,
situation. There could be
exactly.
people in that traffic. I mean, let's say that person that's pulling his luggage was on the way to go to his father's funeral. And he's
Correct.
like, I mean, it could be there's a disruption, right? But it's nice to be able to do that without any kind of like real fear of, fatal retaliation, like maybe in some other countries, right? So, whatever the case may be. So, but you're right. Like, what clearly they're doing it because if they were on the walking path, would it even make the news, right? Like we
It
were
wouldn't.
discussing,
I
it wouldn't make the
absolutely
news.
wouldn't.
It'd be a bunch of kooks over on a walking path holding some
Literally.
signs, right? So yeah, and people would laugh at it, they joke about it, and there'd be a meme about it or whatever the case may be.
Be
So
a thousand
now
memes,
and
bro.
be a thousand memes right on. So now they're across the street. So I think in a situation like that, like we were trying to address there, to me, when that's going on and they got the right to do that, and then you have an emergency, mm-hmm. I think in my mind, and this is my opinion, that time transitions, right? It's like, okay, at this point, this may be happening. That's their right. But my son is the most important thing in this example, in the factor, right? Yeah. So I'm going to drive down a section that I normally wouldn't drive down to bypass all this and break some laws myself, right?
Right.
You know, because laws are what? You know, they're written on pieces of paper to keep order, right? So, you know, simply that. And people respect them, and it keeps order and it keeps people safe and whatever the case may be, right? In this case, they protested. If I need to do what I need to do and get my son to the hospital, I'm breaking some laws myself to get around that, to make sure that he's safe. Or maybe that guy with that dragging that, like I said, that luggage to go to his father's funeral, he don't want to miss his flight, or whatever the case may be, his brother's wedding, you know, things that are important. Everyone has something important. I think where they chose to do it definitely clearly brought attention. I mean, we've got, you know, several likes and reposts and tweets and different things like that and comments, and it brought the attention. I think that was the mainstream part of it. But you're right. It can cause
26,000 views. Actually,
26,000.
No, it's a little bit more. Sorry. 239,000 views.
239,000 views. Yeah. So far. Right. So it brought the attention, and it's getting maybe that portion of that done. But you're right. Like, there, again, there has to be, like, you know, where do you start? Do you start in the street? Maybe you should start on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Maybe they did. And it wasn't getting anywhere, and they transitioned to the road. We don't know.
Yeah, we really don't know. But my thing is that it's not the first time that we have seen it. We have seen it mm-hmm. since October 7th, literally.
Right.
My thing is that now you have people that are bringing a different connotation to this kind of protest, with chants of death to America, lighting up fires in the middle of the road, which happened today in New York City, believe it or not. Literally burning a flag in front of, you know, police officers. Nobody's doing anything. I have a problem with that side of it. You want a peaceful protest? Cool. I'm not burning the Palestinian flag. I'm not burning your freaking signs. Why are you burning something that I hold dear to my heart? Something that I literally swore up to protect and defend until I die. And that's the oath that I took. So that, to me, is, that's the part that it's a little bit more leaned to the right, in all honesty. Because I'm a very... I believe in what I believe when it comes to the Constitution of this country. I believe this is the best country on earth. And we have proven it for 200 plus years. So why bring the disability here if America literally cannot do anything to stop this war? Israel is a sovereign nation as identified by the UN. And this is something that I've said before in a lot of podcasts. I'm like, dude, you want to protest? Go to Gaza. Protest in Gaza. Stop, you know, blocking the roadways here, making a disruption just so people get visibility. It's like 20 of y'all. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Go to Congress. Go protest in Congress every single day, just like they did. They stopped the freaking motorcade to get into the actual State of the Union address. Stop the shit in Gaza. Okay, mm-hmm. got it. Those are the people that can do something. The people in Chicago, O'Hare, and Seattle, Washington, they can't do shit about it. What are you going to do? But again, is there a right to actually protest? So,
well, you know, I heard something one time to kind of plug this. I was just thinking about it, is that, you know, it was, I forget exactly how it went, but it was like, don't take something as malice, which may have been done in ignorance, right? So maybe this protest was done. It wasn't done in a malice way to stop you from taking your son to the hospital, to stop that individual.
Yeah.
It clearly was not, but it could have been done as a quote unquote, like an ignorance kind of thing. Like, hey, this is what I have at the moment. And this is the path I went. And this is what I believe in. But by hindsight, what we all know is clearer, right? A lot of times, address your Congress, address your, like you just said, right? It could be a different path. And maybe that's the next step. Who knows?
Maybe. I think then we have, in America, people have lost sight of what actually can be done in the state, county, federal level. People have very, okay. So in order for an issue to be taken by Congress or taken by an actual anybody within like the senators, it has to be like 30 or 40 people calling the office, addressing the same issue for that senator or that congresswoman or man to actually go in and start doing something about it. So the power of the people is real. It is something that they actually have to do, and they have to document it, because it is something within their district that somebody needs to address. Why are people not doing that? Like, why is it automatically thought like, oh, just leave it to the boomers, they'll take care of that? No, we're here. Like, I'm here. Like, why would I not do that? I have done it before. Has it been addressed? Absolutely the frick not, because it's not something that they care. The only thing that I actually brought up was, and I actually wrote a letter to the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. I sent it to him through social media, through freaking mail, everything, bro. Never got a response. I understand. But it was about the ability for somebody to profit from illegal immigration within the United States. It's an actual penal code on it. It's illegal. You can get up to like 10 years in jail and $10,000 in fines. And people are profiting from that kind of crap. So why is it not being addressed?
Right.
Because not a whole lot of people wrote the same letter. They addressed it. They did it the right way within their congressional delegate and everything like that. That's just the way it goes. So, but yeah, at the end of the day, they have the right to protest. Maybe they did it from a place of ignorance. And we're going to leave it here today. We don't know. We don't know. We'll see how it addresses during the day and whatnot. Mr. Brian Roof, it has been a privilege and a pleasure to be here with you, chatting with you today. Any closing statements that you have?
I would say, man, I appreciate the opportunity of having me a guest. I look forward to doing it in the future. Like you said, I'll be launching Skipping Planets 420, and it'll be kind of a situation where you kind of dive in, maybe dive a little deeper into something that maybe just like a free talk about and situations, and just a completely free talk, right? A deeper situation, maybe some things that may even seem sort of sometimes they might be a little trippy, or they might be, you know, that's kind of the concept. I've had this on my mind for several years, and I decided to put it together, man, and I'll have you as a guest, right?
I would love to be awesome. in your podcast. I think it's something within the lines of the Joe Rogan Experience, but more from the working man. You know what I mean? And that's right. Something that it's lost sight, you know, because
you hit it, man. Hit it.
It's like so up there. Like, he's so up there, right? And we all kind of strive to have the viewership and the listenership that he has. But, you know, we're just little minnows over here in this freaking sea of sharks that we have. Because that's what, you know, that's what this whole podcasting thing is. And it's a creative outlet. I think it's going to be a very interesting project, and I am looking forward to being in your podcast for sure, man. You can let me know when, and I'll freaking be there. I'll make the time.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'll make my closing statement, and then we'll close the podcast for today. We're going in 45 minutes, but we're shooting for 20, but, you know, conversation was good, man. That's how it goes. It really does. Great. All right, so let me close it here real quick. For those of you watching, thank you so much that you got to the end of the video. I really appreciate it. Please give a follow to Mr. Brian Roof on Facebook, which is where I found him, and where you can stay up to date to all the things that he's working. What am I currently working on? I am working on continuing to have conversations that are different. Tomorrow, I have a special guest as well on my podcast, and we're going to talk about fatherhood and the ways that we have to sometimes think like the enemy to make our journey as a father, as a mother, as somebody that takes care of somebody else a little bit more palatable to who we are as a human being. Because at the end of the day, all we want to do is to bring the best version of ourselves to those that we love and care about. This has been Think Like the Enemy with Mr. Brian Roof as our special guest. A very interesting podcast, something that has a different perspective to what we normally think about here in the podcast, with the subjects that matter to you as a listener. Thank you for watching. God bless America. God bless you. And I will see you in the next one. And remember to always think like the enemy.
That's it for-
for this episode of Think Like the Enemy. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion and gained new insights and perspectives on today's issue. If you did, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform and share this episode with your friends. You can also follow us on social media and send us your feedback, questions, and suggestions for future topics. Thank you for listening. And remember, the best way to understand the world is to think like the enemy. Until next time, Frankie A. Viles, signing off.